Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith podcast. I'm Nick McCann, and I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres. We're very close, Nick. Under 20 days, I think, till spring training. We're getting there.
Yeah, we're back for 2023. It's the first podcast of 2023. Last year was one of the best years for San Diego sports, and now we're back. I'm thrilled. I can't wait. This is an off season like no other, and I'm super excited. Are you going to Fan Fest?
I didn't actually reserve my spot. I heard it's completely packed.
I missed it. Yeah, I don't know.
And as a season ticket member, I thought I had priority, but I guess it's that full where there's no availability left. So no, I'm not going to make it.
I don't remember ever having a Fan Fest like that where it's just not, it's a hot ticket.
You had to worry about getting admission. Yeah. That was never a thing. In fact, the opposite. You were kind of worried, were there going to be enough people there to not make it awkward?
Well, yeah, it's a new era for Padres baseball, and it's a new era for San Diego sports. We're really lucky to have a special guest on tonight. He's the new San Diego Union Tribune sports editor, Ryan Finley. What's going on?
What's going on, boys? How you guys doing?
Hey, we're good. Great. We're excited to have you on and get to know you. It's an amazing change of the guard over at the San Diego UT. What's the first few weeks been like?
It's been a lot. Some of the job is like drinking from a fire hose, to be honest with you. But a lot of that, you know, it's like starting any new job, right? You know, the computer system's a little different than the one you used to use, right? You're getting used to new equipment and new people and everything else. But, you know, the one thing that I've really been blown away with is just how capable all of our reporters are, how conscientious they've been. And it's funny, it's been a pretty busy couple of weeks for Padre baseball. Yeah. I think it was my third day when they first announced that they had signed Nelson Cruz. And since then, there have been all sorts of things, you know, starting with, well, the Cruz signing and Mike Clevenger and all that news from earlier. Now we're getting into spring training. So it's been a very, very fun few weeks. I tell people all the time, you know, it doesn't feel like work, and I'd be reading all these stories anyway. You know, just as somebody who's been a reader of the Union Tribune all my life, it's really fun to do this for a living and to get to work with such talented journalists across the board. It's been fun.
Yeah, I mean, let's hear a little bit about your story. I mean, you grew up in San Diego and you went to uni.
Yeah.
High school, which is a problem for me, but I don't know if that's we can get past that. I think
as long as you're not a Saints guy, I think.
No, I'm not a Saints guy. I hate both Saints and Uni. I'm a Sarah High School graduate. Formerly Sarah High School.
Is it Canyon Vista now?
Yeah, Canyon Hills. Canyon Hills. The Rattlers. Canyon Hills.
Go Rattlers.
That's what we're doing.
Yes. Go Rattlers.
But I mean, you grew up here, and your dad worked for the paper. What was it like growing up reading the place where your dad was working?
You know, what's funny is he worked for the Union and then the Tribune, right? Basically high school until I was probably about 4 or 5 years old. And so I didn't really get to experience life with him kind of working for the paper. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't really have many memories of him being at work. After that, he went and he worked in San Diego State's athletic department for years. He was their media contact for basketball. And I have much more vivid memories of going to football practice with him, going to basketball practice, going to basketball games. You know, it's funny the way sort of the world works. You know, I grew up in Del Cerro, you know, probably 5 minutes from Jack Murphy. And, you know, we'd go to games, you know, Wednesday nights, if we could get our homework done early. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we caught my dad in the right mood. You know, we could just go down there and go to a game, and, you know, tickets were $5 and you can sit anywhere you wanted because they stunk and nobody went. And, you know, I think fell in love with baseball because of the day-to-dayness of it. Mm-hmm. There's something really cool about a sport that, I mean, unfolds one day at a time over 6 months. And part of that was, I think, growing up so close to the stadium and going as much as we did. I mean, we probably went to 20 games a year when I was a kid, if not more. And then when I was in high school, I actually worked as a vendor at Qualcomm, like as a peanut guy, you know, and that allowed me to see really the 96, 97, and 98 seasons which is a pretty good time to be a Padre fan.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not sure I missed more than 5 games in 3 years, though, you know, just because of my job. And again, you got to watch baseball every day and you got to be around it. And, you know, this was a long time ago. You know, you'd meet in the same tunnel as the players before the games, to sort of get your assignments before going up to your stands. And, you know, I just think kind of being around sports my whole life maybe made it a little more accessible to me. You know, maybe something that I thought I might actually be able to pursue a career in sports. Uh-huh. I'm not athletic. You see what I look like. I'm not a particularly athletic guy. I don't do much more beyond pick up basketball and like Monday night softball. But I've always felt really comfortable around sports. And, you know, that's really what led me into this profession. And it's been really a lot of fun.
Hey, don't sell yourself short on pick up basketball. Last time I did that, I thought I was going to like die. So. You are an athlete. You are.
I'm on the tallish side. So usually, if I can just camp out underneath the hoop,
got it. You know,
I don't have to expend a ton of energy.
Post up everywhere. Got it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, that's interesting. So, I mean, this world of working in media is really not. It doesn't feel that unattainable because your dad's working in it, and then you know it does seem possible to you, right? That's what.
Yeah. You know, it's something I grew up dreaming of doing, and. You know, not very many people, you know, I think we get to, and aren't we lucky, but, you know, not a lot of people out there get to do the thing that they dreamed of doing when they were 6 years old. And, you know, I don't take that for granted, you know, not for one day. And being back in San Diego is really kind of beyond sort of what I ever thought was possible. You know, I've spent the last 17 or 18 years in Tucson, Arizona, covering, I start off as the high school's reporter at the Arizona Daily Star. From there, I covered college football for 8 years, and then I was the sports editor for about 8 years. And, you know, being around the Pac-12 and college athletics and all that was a lot of fun. And, you know, I never really thought of leaving Tucson. Tucson's great. But, you know, when this thing came open and I heard Jay would be retiring, you know, I only hoped that they would get – I only hoped for an interview. I figured if I could interview with them, my passion for San Diego sports – and my resume might be enough. And as it turns out, it was. And, you know, it's been a really fun whirlwind 3 weeks so far.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, growing up and, you know, consuming sports media like that, I mean, what excited you about writers? Who blew your hair back when you were reading, like, sports writing of the, you know, late 80s and 90s? What really blew your mind?
You know, the people who came through the UT at that time, I mean, it's hilarious. I mean, you've got just a monster list of people. You know, Pedro Gomez interned at the Union or the Tribune when he was in college. You know, Buster Olney wrote for them. Kevin Kernan wrote for them. You know, obviously, when you talk about who do you kind of look up to, I think all of us grew up reading Nick Canepa, right? And it's, you know, it's great that he still writes for the UT in a little bit more of a limited capacity. But, you know, I grew up reading every word that Nick wrote. I really liked, let's see. I mean, there's such a long list of guys. Tim Sullivan was somebody who could not be more different from Nick in terms of writing style, but every bit as effective as a columnist. I think Mark Ziegler is fantastic. Chris Jenkins, somebody who I believe recently relocated back to San Diego and is more of a freelancer now. Chris Jenkins was just a fabulous writer, still is. And, you know, it's really fun. Some of these names, these guys who I grew up reading, are still there. You know, Nick is still at the UT. Don Norcross, a guy who, you know, I read all the time growing up, still at the UT. You know, we were texting like yesterday about some story. John Maffey is a guy who I worked with at North County Times very briefly out of college and somebody who's still there. You know, it's really cool. You know, these guys, I would have never guessed, you know, as a 10-year-old or whatever, that one of these days I'd be working with these guys. And, that's one of the things that makes this, it's just been a surreal few weeks, just so much fun to get started.
Yeah. And like a guy like Canepa, who is, you know, you're right. I mean, we've grown up reading him, when something happens in San Diego sports, I can almost hear his voice, commenting on it after it happens in my head. I mean, it's that ingrained into me, and I think most people in the community. But like, do you think, like, in your tenure at the San Diego Union Tribune, do you think there's going to be a place for a writer like that? That, you know, once Nick finally hangs it up, I mean, do you think that type of figure who comes with like the general sports take for the community when it's needed? Do you think that somebody could fill those shoes while you're there?
You know, that's really interesting. You know, Nick's style is something that, you know, may not be the most popular style now among young journalists, right? You know, not a lot of people sort of have broad opinions on everything, in part because I think having strong opinions about every topic gets you in trouble sometimes. Yeah. You know, I think we all have Twitter accounts. We all know what that's all about.
Yes.
You know, I don't know what makes what I love so much about the UT sports staff is you have three people who essentially write columns: Nick Canepa, Bryce Miller, and Tom Krasovic. And all three of them get to kind of the same end result in very different ways, right? Mm-hmm. Nick, if Nick thinks that the shift stinks, Nick will just write that the shift stinks, right? If Nick thinks, you know, rather than writing about why you should dislike the Chargers, let's say, you know, he calls them the Lodgers and the team that used to be here. And, you know, I'm not sure he's written the name Dean Spanos in years, right? It's Fred.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. 5 years. You know, yeah.
In many ways, you know, it's funny. And then you look at somebody like Bryce Miller, who sort of sticks the knife in very slowly. And I mean that in a very nice way. He's such a gifted writer that he leads you to an opinion rather than stating it up front. Mm-hmm. And then you've got somebody like Tom Krasovic, who I think has such a great grasp of history. I mean, Kras is one of those guys. I read Kras growing up because he was the Padres beat guy, right? And, yep. You know, he's somebody who can tell you where everything fits. He had something that he was posting as we record this about, you know, if the Padres just weren't so darn cheap in 1992 and signed Todd Helton after they had agreed to a contract with him, you know, the Padres might have a Hall of Fame first baseman next year, right? I mean, Todd Helton was prepared to sign with the Padres. They had agreed to a number. And after the draft, Padres ownership said, "Yeah, we're not going to pay him that much. That's a lot of money. Sorry." And so Todd Helton went to college. You know, to have that, to even think when you see Todd Helton's name, oh my gosh, remember the Padres could have had him. I had forgotten about all of that.
Yeah. Mm.
And so all these guys kind of get you to a certain place, but in very different ways. And, you know, will we ever see a columnist like Nick again? I don't think so. But I think that that's more a compliment to Nick than it is a sign that that kind of columnist is going out of fashion. You know, I just think Nick's a once in a lifetime kind of guy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it seems like for somebody that can write like that to stay in one market for that long, it's just kind of a miracle, right? Like, I don't know how many people would stick it out that long, you know?
Oh, I know. Well, and you know, Nick's, you know, and every once in a while, Nick will say something or write something, and you go, how do you know that? How do you remember that? And then and you go like, oh, well, you know, he's been a columnist since the early 80s. You know, we talked the other day about Don Coryell is likely going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, right? We'll find out here in a couple of weeks, the NFL honors thing. And I don't want to turn this into an NFL conversation, but I said, to Nick,
that's
said,
kind hey, of a man, finally, right? It.
Yeah. Well, I said, Nick, if he makes it, I mean, you're writing the story, right? And he goes, oh, I've written so much about Coryell over the years. I went, you were the guy who pushed for Coryell. Mm. You know, Nick has been around and he's such a big voice, even now in the NFL community, among the media. You know, I think some credit for Don Coryell's inevitable induction here into the Pro Football Hall of Fame is going to be given to Nick, because Nick pushed for so long for Coryell to get in. And you know, to have Nick and sort of that living history working at the UT is just a special deal. Very fun. Yeah.
Oh, I don't believe that he doesn't have, I bet he has it saved on his computer right now. He's just ready. Just ready. Yeah. I mean, this has been his war for a long time. Like the
And it's a just, yeah. And it's a just war. I mean, the fact that he wasn't in there is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, but it, you know, it's fun, you know, and Nick, you know, that's sort of the dichotomy that is Nick. Is, you know, he can write on a Sunday about the team that used to be here and the Judases and the Lodgers and all of that, and sort of in the same breath, really stump hard for somebody who's a part of that franchise's history. You know, Nick's just special. It's been really cool to work alongside him. And, you know, he's everything that I had hoped he would be as a coworker so far, and still a very, very talented writer. And that's so very cool to see.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he gets lumped into something that, you know, a lot of criticism for the UT sports page is, you know, has come across a lot since the Chargers have left and the coverage has continued. And I mean, how do you see that going forward? They just had a horrible loss against Jacksonville that kind of everybody came out of the woodworks, and, you know, people that have always hated the team since they left got to dunk on them. And, you know, other people got to defend themselves for still holding, you know, a fan and a fandom for them. But I mean, how do you see the coverage going forward? It obviously is something that is ingrained in the community. People still care. Do you agree with how Jay covered it before you? And do you think people might just be ready for Padres baseball and you can kind of move past it? I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. You know, I think that the real challenge in this job and the real challenge in San Diego is going to be to find that thing that slots in at number two behind the Padres, right? Uh-huh. I think everybody can now agree with the Padres trying and spending money and having superstar players that they are sort of San Diego's best hope at a championship and the one thing that San Diegans can rally behind sports-wise. What's number two? You know, I think it could be or should be San Diego State. And they might get there sooner if they become a part of a Power Five conference here in the next couple of years, right? Yeah. You know, if they're all of a sudden joining the Pac-12, and you know, the newspaper in the market that I come from is the Pac-12. And you know, I have some familiarity with that. I think that there's the thought that they're really a favorite to join this league. You know, if San Diego State then slots in behind them, you know, maybe then the Chargers aren't as big a deal locally. I'm not sure. I will say this about the Chargers. You know, as a native San Diegan, I have my opinions about them. But, you know, they're probably the most loved and also the most hated team in town, right? I mean, if we took a poll of 100 San Diegans, you know, and said, hey, you know, raise your hand if the Chargers are your favorite team, my guess is 30 of them would raise their hands. We said, raise your hands if you hate the Chargers, probably 30 of them would raise their hands. And everybody else would kind of be in between. In a lot of ways, that does make them very newsworthy in town. In fact, I've come to admire Jay's restraint with the Chargers. If we wanted to get page views, man, and if we wanted to hit it hard and get people reading the UT online all the time, it would be nonstop pro-Charger versus anti-Charger talk, right? But it's really not. In terms of local stuff, I mean, really the only local bylines that we have is Nick does a Chargers report card after every Charger game, and Krasovic will write periodically about them and sort of where they fit. But he also writes about the rest of the NFL too, and locals in the NFL. So, you know, I think my instinct now, and again, I'm brand new, so like, I may change my opinion, but my instinct now is that Jay had exactly the right tone with this, was that you can't ignore them just because they left, but that doesn't mean that you have to dedicate a beat reporter to them either. You know, my guess is UT would average maybe two or three stories a week about the Chargers. And I think that's about right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, my dad is he's a UT customer. He has a physical copy of the UT delivered to his house every day. Yeah. And, you know, when I'm hanging out there on Sundays, he'll get annoyed with me if I'm not changing it over to the Chargers. Like, what? It's just, he's not even from San, he's from Oakland, but he on Sunday afternoons in the fall, it's like, why aren't we watching the Chargers? They're on.
I think it would be different if they moved to like Vegas, right? I mean, I think as San Diegans, maybe it wouldn't be such a visceral reaction for a lot of us if the Chargers had moved to a city other than Los Angeles. The fact that it was LA and that San Diego's identity is, you know, we're not LA, right?
Not LA, I mean, yeah, like, exactly.
You know, the place where I've lived for 18 years, Tucson, Arizona, you know, they have much the same sort of reaction with Phoenix. You know, they stop confusing us with Phoenix. We're not Phoenix, right? Mm-hmm. I think that the fact that they lost the Chargers, not to Orange County, not to Oceanside, not to Las Vegas, but to Los Angeles, I think is what makes that really sting for a lot of fans and former fans. Don't you guys think?
Yeah, yes, I think that's a big part of it. I think the connection with the Dodgers and Padres and, you know, everything that they have, the two cities, it's just they don't want to be associated with each other. And it felt like the NFL was forcing us to be one somehow.
The fact that it was LA and they had another football team already coming in too. It was just, it felt unnecessarily and almost like an intentional shove at San Diego. Like, we'll put two teams in LA and you can't even have one. It was all of that.
How about this? We'll put a team in Carson.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
While we wait for the stadium in LA to be built.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the thing that still sort of drives me a little crazy. It's like, you couldn't have spent 2 years playing in. Now look, Qualcomm, when was the last time you guys have been to Qualcomm? It's It's not, or when was the last time you guys went to Qualcomm?
I saw my fleet in there, the San Diego fleet for the
AFL. I have a fleet t-shirt somewhere. Yeah. I loved the 6 weeks that season existed.
That's a whole other podcast. That was a time to be alive.
I mean, I would go to the Holiday Bowl every year.
And yeah, I'd fly in
from Arizona and we'd go. And one year, the roof above us was dripping.
Yeah.
And you go, Qualcomm was falling apart, but yes. You couldn't have kept the Chargers at Qualcomm for like 2 years while they built the stadium in LA. Like, that's the stuff that I thought was punitive. You know, it's like they were playing in a soccer stadium in Carson, California. I don't know. The Charger thing's complicated. I think
it is.
I think they're newsworthy because they're both loved and hated in San Diego. And I think that if they were to get really good, they would almost become too good to ignore just from a newsworthiness standpoint. But they're sort of in this weird middle ground where I think that they're interesting. I think Justin Herbert's super interesting. And they have talented players, but they're underachieving, which is something that, as somebody who grew up watching the Chargers, maybe it shouldn't surprise me. You know, the Chargers of my youth and of our youth, guys, they were always really interesting and had a lot of very good players. Uh-huh. It just couldn't really deliver in the playoffs.
That's in their DNA.
Yeah.
I mean, when the Jaguars kicker is lining up for that field goal, we all knew he was going to make it, right? Like, we've seen this movie how many times before in our lives?
That was so good.
It was just different being excited about it instead of soul crushed about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we knew exactly
I'm kind of agnostic about it, where I think I have sort of a separation. Maybe it's just that I haven't been living in San Diego. I have a separation from them where I don't really care how they do every week. I just, I don't. And when they were lining up for that field goal, I could kind of be like, I could turn off the TV right now. I could tell you exactly how this game is. Just because growing up, I mean, this was a part of Charger history. Right. So,
I mean, I feel like I'm one of the people that just screw the Chargers. I'm never rooting for you. That's just over. But I've had a real distance from football. Like, I just kind of don't follow it anymore. I feel healthier. I feel like a better person. I get to have a moral superiority over people that do. It's great. It's all I want from a sport. You know,
I just watch the Red Zone. I'll be honest with you. I watch Red Zone and that. That, a fantasy league or two in Red Zone on Sundays, that's kind of okay. I don't have a favorite team, and it makes for good TV. I think the NFL is really the one sport that you could watch kind of anybody play anybody, and the production value is good, and the competition is usually pretty good. You can sit there for 3 hours. You know, I can't do that with the NBA. And even baseball. Baseball is my favorite sport, and it's not close. I have a hard time sitting down and watching the Rays playing the Orioles. Or, two teams I don't know a ton about. I'll watch every minute of every Padre game, but I think it's really hard to get into people, the teams you don't follow, as opposed to the NFL, where I think it's all really packaged well.
It's true. Yeah. And playoff NFL is some of the best, TV out there that I haven't watched in years, but I've been watching the playoffs this year, and it's been really good football.
It's really fun when you don't really have a horse in the race, too, because you can just sit there and kind of root for a good game. That has been really one of the cool things for me is, watching the NFL doesn't stress me out the way it used to.
Totally.
Right? Exactly. When I was a kid watching the Chargers, man, that was a whole day thing. Right. And, not so much anymore. So,
the team that's still in town. I mean, that's what we should be talking about. The Padres are, they're coming off one of the best seasons of the franchise's history. And you get to cover it going into this season. I mean, how excited are you about, just following a team or covering a team that has this cast of characters? We have so many bright stars and so much hope going into this season. I mean, do you feel the pressure to not screw it up? Is that where you're at?
I think it's so fun. It's like I was telling some of my friends, the guys I grew up with, they're like, this must be a dream job for you. I was like, it's a dream in that the Padres are spending money and are competitive. The work part's just kind of cool. It's crazy to me. And again, we're roughly the same age. I grew up during the fire sale, right? I mean, I learned all about training established big leaguers for prospects, right? And when I was a kid, because you see enough guys go. You know, we talked, I think off camera about Melvin Nieves, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You get him from the Atlanta Braves. And I think that was when I learned the phrase prospects or suspects, you know, that that if somebody's trading you a prospect, it might be because they don't like them all that much. It's just such a trip to see the Padres, A, wearing brown again, which is still one of the greater moves in the history of the franchise, I think. Two, spending money, and C, not spending money on, I mean, spending money on fun players. You know, Juan Soto is fun. Xander Bogaerts is going to be fun. Like, they didn't go spend money on, you know, sort of baseball dork kind of guys who or robots, right? They spent money on big name flashy ass guys.
Flashy, yeah.
And you know that to me, that's what's so fun is they're both going to be both good and interesting. And I can think in at least my history of Padre baseball, that's probably only happened twice, and that'd be 84 and 98.
Yeah.
And they had teams that were both really good and really interesting. And last year, of course.
Yeah. I mean, this is a complete different, I mean, you mentioned the fire sale. It's something that we talk about a lot on this podcast. We always bring it up to people that are our age. And yeah, I mean, going into that period for Padres baseball, I remember walking into Qualcomm with my dad during the fire sale and somebody in front of him asked the usher, what are you guys giving away today? And my dad said, probably Tony Gwynn. And he got a huge laugh from everybody around him. Like that was funny in 1993 or whatever, you know. And now we're a completely different position where we actually, if a problem presents itself on the roster, we assume ownership is just going to fix it because that's what they do. They fix it. Yeah, it was like last they year, do, and they
like,
have.
It's like last year when they didn't have a DH or first baseman, and you kind of go, yeah, well, they'll figure it out. And they kind of did. To me, what's cool is I think growing up in San Diego during the Tony Gwynn era, and, you know, I mean, Tony Gwynn is my favorite athlete of any sport of all time. And if, God forbid, you got a hold of my ATM card, probably a lot of number 19s in my pack. Right. I think that growing up, we were probably led to believe that the Padres could only have one superstar. That when they traded away all of these guys, sort of the unspoken thing was, well, if we're going to keep Tony, or if they're going to keep Trevor Hoffman, that they're going to have to trade away all these other guys. And how cool is it now that you've got probably three or four players on the 2023 team that you could make the argument that with a good year could be branded the best player in baseball?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, crazy. I mean, and that's not counting Xander Bogaerts. I mean, this is Tatis, Machado, and Soto. I mean, I was looking at something today. It was odds for, I believe it was National League MVP. And of the eight players listed, four were Padres. In my head exploded.
That's wild.
I mean, as somebody who is used to Tony Gwynn in right field and a revolving cast of characters around him, it's crazy to see the Padres have so much star power on the same team. And it's going to make them really fun to watch this year.
Yeah, you know, a big storyline going into the season is how the star dynamic will work, putting with Tatis coming back to the clubhouse. I think it's going to be one of the biggest challenges for Bob Melvin, just acclimating him back in after the success that was last year. I mean, with what the UT has to work with, the tools of having the access, I mean, how do you guys plan on getting up in the middle of that relationship and trying to find out how that's going? I mean, what's the game plan for, you know, infiltrating the clubhouse like that?
Well, you lean on your reporters for starters. Oh. You know, Kevin Acey is, at least to my knowledge, you know, the one reporter who goes everywhere, right? Everywhere with the team and travels to every city. And sometimes, it can be just him on some nights, right? I think you lean on your reporters to do their jobs. They have these great relationships, or at least history, Kevin learns things and I think does a really good job of taking the temperature of the clubhouse in any given moment. You know, the thing last year that he wrote with Cronenworth, and it was Burn the Boats, right? When they were in Phoenix. Remember this?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was something that, you know, as they that really kickstarted their real push towards the end of the regular season. Yeah, you lean on your reporters. And, you know, what makes this year so fun from a media standpoint, guys, is the games all mean a little bit more, I think, because they're expected to be so good. And there's also going to be this whole new crowd of sort of casual Padre fans, right? Guys, we've all gone to games in years in which they lose 100 games. And I've always found a way to enjoy baseball, whether they were winning or losing, right? But having a really good team with these superstars is going to draw in the casual fan like you wouldn't believe. And so as a media organization, I think our job is to try to serve two different groups. It's to really, you know, treat the game, every night's game, with the respect it deserves because it's such a relevant sporting event, because they're expected to be so good. But also try to draw in the casual fan and explain to them why this is special, right? Explain, and maybe that's a story about being a native San Diegan and saying, hey, you know, don't take this for granted, right? You know, I'm in my 40s and I can count the number of good Padre teams in my lifetime on one hand.
Is this going to be a featured article about me? Because that sounds exactly like you describing my native San Diegan fandom. Yeah.
I know. And you just sit there, you go like, you know, that's what makes this so much fun is, you know, we can really have some fun with it from a coverage standpoint. You know, obviously the UT, you know, I'm now the proud co-host of the Hot Lava podcast. And I, you know, that always tended to be, you know, as a follower of the Padres, I didn't miss an episode because they really got into sort of the matchup stuff, the statistical stuff. Mm-hmm. That just kind of as a baseball dork myself, I say this as a compliment. As a baseball dork, I wanted to listen to. But I also think that there's a path out there where we're telling sort of stories in an accessible way to people who may just now start to follow baseball because the Padres are good. And, you know, luckily, I think that we have the staff size and we have the talent on staff where we can make all of that happen. But just really looking forward. I wish it could be March 15th already, you know, just – cannot wait for the season to get going.
Yeah. Is this the first season, you know, since the pandemic where you guys will have access like in spring training up close?
Yes.
Because I always heard that was like when you guys, you know, from AJ Cassavell and everybody always says that's when you build relationships.
It's when you learn training. Stuff. Right.
And hasn't been the case the last 2 years, right?
I mean, it's exactly. And yes. So this year it's going to go back to pre-pandemic stuff. So, you know, the media will be in the clubhouse mask free, you know, with sort of the same level of regularity that they were all the way up until the pandemic. But, you know, this is where just as a sports writer, and there's no magic to it. It's just going to work every day and asking the right questions and trusting your eyes, right? You know, I covered college football forever. You know, I used to beg them to open practices, not because I liked standing around watching the same thing every day over and over again. It's because that's where you got a chance to introduce yourself to people on the sidelines, to ask a couple of questions, to find out who's good, who is worth writing about and worth spending energy on, and who isn't, frankly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is spring training in a nutshell right there. It's a lot of time standing around a cage, building relationships with people and building kind of these little scouting reports in your head of who's important and, you know, who might be better than you thought they'd be and who might not be as good as you thought they'd be. And that's invaluable stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you mentioned like when you listen to, you know, the Hot Lava podcast and you're looking for like more dense statistical discussion generally, but you know, with covering baseball for the sports page, you're in this weird moment where the kids that are drawn to the sport coming up are probably more interested in the analytical side. They're reading stuff like that. They need to be served too. But then you also have people like my dad who are, you know, reading physical copies of newspapers from their driveway, and they grew up arguing about Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle based on just who they liked more.
Right. Who looked better in the uniform, right? Yeah.
But they didn't have war to basically shut those conversations down. You know, where do you land on that? And how do you plan on evolving the UT's coverage of it?
You know, it's funny. I think kind of age-wise, I probably fall right in between those two groups.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's, you know, I can, you know, I can explain why somebody is better than somebody else, but then I can also say to you in the next breath, but I really loved watching Reggie Sanders, right? And not necessarily because his numbers were great or because it said anything, but because I just really liked watching him. I think that there's a way to serve both groups. I think, you know, I'm not sure that the UT is going to be the first place every fan of advanced metrics goes for Padre stuff, but we would be idiots if we didn't acknowledge that the advanced metrics exist and try to explain those metrics in a way that, you know, somebody like your dad might go, oh, okay, like I can see that, right? You know, I think by and large, and maybe you guys disagree, but, you know, these advanced metrics to me often confirm things that I sort of believe anyway, mm-hmm. right? Like, I think that traditional metrics and advanced metrics oftentimes line up and can help explain why somebody is as good as they are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that it's a way, it's taking sort of the high-end stuff and making it really accessible to our readers, maybe trying to urge people like your dad to move a little bit more towards the metric side. Also, it's about telling stories. You know, at the end of the day, guys, you know, we're not curing cancer. You know, we're, it's sports. And I think that the role of newspapers is not only to document all of this stuff, but to use the access that you get to tell stories that might make a reader like the team more or understand, maybe understand the team more is the better phrase. And I can count your stories through the years that Kevin has written and before him, you know, Dennis Lynn, where, you know, in reading it, you go like, oh, that's why they do the things that they do, or that explains why they act this way. And, you know, to me, that's an invaluable part of our job.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Kevin's a really interesting person because he came from covering the NFL and in the market, and then he took over the baseball beat. I mean, you know, he had a very, it seemed as a reader, he had like a special relationship with Ron Fowler, and that's obviously Ron Fowler isn't as involved as he was before. But I mean, did you notice that in the coverage that he would get information from him? Or
I never actually, that's a good question. That is a question I will ask Kevin at some point. I never deduced that everything he got was coming from Fowler. I don't think that was the case. I think that he was around, you know, the sources that you develop when you're following a team every day, mm-hmm. you know, it's often not the ones that the average fan would think, right? But Ron Fowler did talk to the UT and was quoted in the UT a lot. And so, mm-hmm. you know, it sounds as if Ron was a reader or at least understood the importance of talking to the local newspaper. You know, to me, the most interesting thing about sort of the Kevin Acey story, such as it is he gave up what I think most people would consider the best job at the paper, not in sports, the best job at the paper, mm-hmm. which is columnist, which is you get to pick what you get to write about every day. You can travel as much or as little as you want. You get to sort of parachute in for important things. You can go to every Super Bowl. You can go to every NBA Finals. You can go to the Kentucky Derby. You can go to the Masters. Uh-huh. You can just parachute in on stuff. He took that job and traded it for what is in many ways, I think, the most thankless job in journalism, which is 162 games a year covering a baseball team. That is a grind, guys. I mean,
yeah, it is.
Just the travel alone, you know, I think that even as much as I love baseball, I think I could probably do it for 1 year. And then maybe I'd go a couple years without watching a game after that. You know, Kevin willingly took on this Padres beat because he knew that in the absence of the Chargers, that the Padres were going to be the thing at some point. And, you know, he had a couple years where, you know, obviously things were lean, but, you know, he's now sort of, I think, the understood Padre expert at a time in which the Padres are going to be more relevant than they've ever been. And, you know, again, I'm not sure a whole lot of people in journalism would trade a columnist job for, you know, a 4-city, 12-game road trip to, you know, Cincinnati, Chicago, and Milwaukee. Yeah. But Kevin did.
Yeah. I mean, he said it on this podcast before, where, you know, this was the job that he always wanted, you know, and I think that comes through in what he does. I mean, I think it's a tough job. It's one of the tougher jobs in sports where you have to cover the team for that many nights, you know. And,
I think he has the right attitude about it. You know, I think that I like his attitude. He seems to come from a direction of, isn't this cool? You know, as opposed to so many sports writers. And look, I'm one of them. I've been one of them. You know, so many sports writers are willing to tell you how put upon they are, how much the travel sucks, or how little sleep they get. You know, Kevin, especially publicly, is really good about talking about how much fun it is mm-hmm. to get to cover sports in general and baseball specifically for a living. And, you know, I think I'm wired a little bit like Kevin is in that, you know, I think that this job that I have is going to be a lot of work, but my God, it's going to be a lot of fun. And especially if I can be around, you know, the night the Padres do something really special for the city of San Diego, in many ways, for me, that would be a dream come true. Just as somebody who is a sports fan, you know, from Del Cerro, who grew up kind of never thinking that the Padres would be very good, to be honest with you. And now look at them.
Well, you know, I'll let you put your sports fan hat on just before we get out of here. What do you think the Padres should do now before spring training? I mean, what holes do you think they could fill? I mean, not that I'm questioning Peter Seidler, but I mean, he will fix it. I believe that. But, you know, what direction would you want him to go in as a fan or any, you know, just somebody who's interested in the Padres?
I said this on the Hot Lava podcast, so I'm going to repeat myself and I'm sorry. I'd go sign Zach Greinke. I would.
Oh, yeah.
He's a free agent. He can be had for relatively cheap. What this team needs at this point is innings. They need innings eaters. And there may not be a better innings eater in baseball year in and year out than Zach Greinke. You could slot him in at your four or your five. That would give you a little insurance if Nick Martinez isn't exactly who you thought he would be, or if Adrian Morahone isn't exactly who you think he's going to be. To me, they need one more veteran at the back end of that rotation. You know, remember last year when they had seven starting pitchers at the beginning of the year?
Yeah.
And we all went, what are they going to do with all these starting pitchers? And at the end, they had just enough, right? Maybe they needed one more at the very end. You know, it's that old cliche that you can never have too much starting pitching. I think they need starting pitching. I think that the DH position is going to be some platoon between Cruz and Matt Carpenter. I think that that is a separate podcast. To me, it's really interesting that they're putting so much trust in those two guys. The guarantee that they gave Matt Carpenter is fascinating to me. Speaking of advanced metrics, somebody there must be a huge believer in the small sample size that they saw from Matt Carpenter last year.
Right.
And I think catcher's huge. You know, we've read from Kevin and from others over and over and over again through the years that Luis Campusano needs some more seasoning back there, and that he might not be the game caller that Austin Nola is. You know, Austin Nola is beloved, it seems like. Uh-huh. You know, I think at some point Campusano either needs to be given a chance to play or be given a chance to play first base or DH. To me, that catching position is going to be a huge thing. You know, as much as I think we all loved Jorge Alfaro's heroics last year at times.
Yeah.
There was a time when, you know, the catcher spot, especially in the batting order, was not necessarily a strength of theirs. And so I think catcher's huge. So those are sort of my three question spots heading into the year.
Now, do you want the Zach Greinke signing so you guys can post the article about like weird stuff that Zach Greinke said, or is that? It seems like that's
exactly the Carlos Quentin Zach Greinke fight from 10 years ago.
I mean,
spilled into the parking lot.
I think about that every single day. It's my favorite. It's one of the best things on the internet.
You know, to me, and you know, maybe not Greinke, but somebody like
no. But Greinke. I get what you're saying. Yeah. You know, I think that's right. I mean, they need like an innings eater veteran.
Yeah.
Greg Maddux.
And Manaea was that a little bit. You know, Manaea's numbers weren't good last year, but you know, he wasn't making a ton of money. I think he paid $10 million, right, in a walk year. He, especially early in the year, was really good and was giving them six, seven innings at a time when Blake Snell was hurt, right? And at a time when Clevinger was hurt, right? You know, and at a time when some guys couldn't get through the fourth inning. You need that guy. And, you know, if he's a veteran guy with a track record, all the better. You know, could Nick Martinez be that guy? Sure. I think he could. But, you know, you can never have too much starting pitching. And, you know, the only thing Zach Greinke is going to cost you is money. And the Padres seem pretty comfortable with spending money. To me, that would make some sense.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be an exciting season. And just a bill. I mean, it's exciting. It feels. There's a buzz already, and people are just waiting for the next checkpoint in the off season, which I guess is Fan Fest coming up. Are you going, Ryan? Are you going?
I'm not. I've heard that tickets are sold out.
Yeah, tickets are tough. Yeah.
But by the way, remember, I'm old enough to remember when Fan Fest was a chance to go buy jerseys and team issued jackets for cheap, and now it's become like this whole thing, man. It's pretty cool.
It's like Woodstock. It's like our Coachella almost.
Yeah. To me, that's the next mile marker. And then obviously pitchers and catchers report, I think it's the day after the Super Bowl, and boom, we're into baseball season.
Nice. Well, thanks for coming on, Ryan. This has just been a blast.
Yes, thank you.
You know, thanks for giving us your time. Check Ryan out at Ryan_Finley on Twitter and the Hot Lava podcast and a little sports section at the UT. You can check that out every day. I mean, that's the most of his work that he's doing. So, thanks for coming on, and we'd love to continue this conversation maybe throughout the season.
Absolutely. I will come on anytime. If we can talk Padres, and especially the mid-90s Padres, I'm your guy. I am totally. We can talk Eddie Williams. Yes. We can talk Tim Hires. We can talk. I'm trying to name obscure Padres. Yeah. And then
I'm thinking of doing a series, maybe like a focus subject series this summer, where we, and you could be a part of this, Ryan, where we break down the early Petco fence debate. And we just dig into it. Like all the problems with the fence being too far out. Maybe you could join us for that. That'll be the Phil Nevin of it all, I guess. I don't know. But you can check us out on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram at The Kept Faith. And we'll be back after Fan Fest with some more Padres talk, and just getting excited for the season. All right.
Catch it!